Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 27th of Iyar. Start with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, to David Hochhauser for helping us present the shiurim online. Today we're going to see Shu'ut Heichal Yitzchak from the Or Chaim section of Rav Herzog. Herzog, the first Ashkenazi chief rabbi of the state of Israel. The Or Chaim section, Simon Vav, response number 6. He's responding to a question from a shul in Milan, Italy. They wanted to know if they can make hosafos and kriyas haTorah, if they can add people who get aliyot to the Torah, and it's a fundraising effort, because the people getting aliyah give a gift to the shul for having gotten the aliyah. The twist is that they want to do it by reading the parsha over and over again several times, which is not what's done in other shuls in Milan at the time. This is from the 27th of Iyar of Tavshin Yudalev, 1954. Rav Herzog notes that they had said the custom in Italy at the time was not to do that. The custom in Italy was on Chagim, including Yom Kippur. The reason why Chagim and Yom Kippur is a chiddush, is a new idea, is that, well, as we'll see, the idea of Hosafot is mentioned in the Gemara mostly about Shabbatot. So they would do it on Yom Kippur and Chagim, even when they're not on Shabbat. Meaning, if they're on Shabbat, you're having seven aliyot. Even though it's Yom Tov, you could have said, yeah, but we're allowed to make Hosafot, we're allowed to make additional aliyot on Shabbat, because the Gemara refers to different aliyot, to additional aliyot on Shabbat. But the custom in Italy at the time was that even on a Chag, on a Yom Tov, on a holiday, even on Yom Kippur, when you had only six aliyot, and that you would have thought was different because Yom Kippur is between, in terms of number of aliyot, and on other things as well, but our topic is aliyot, calling people up to the Torah, is in between a holiday and a Shabbat. So you might have thought that those numbers were important, and you have to maintain those numbers. So other synagogues, other Batei Knesset, split up the parsha into more parts so they can add aliyot, so they can add numbers of people. But this shul in Milan, which is called Mishkan Yisrael, so they, instead of splitting up the parsha into more parts, they would just read it over several times. One time, two times, three times, the number of times doesn't matter. They would read it over again. The question is there anything wrong with that? That's what they're turning to Rav Herzog for advice about. And an important piece here is that by doing this, they get the money they need to support the shul, or they see it as important to running the shul. I'm not sure how that works, because I've been in shuls and I've seen the amounts of money that people give, and I've never understood how people find that to be a significant amount of money. I think over the course of an entire year, then, you know, this, I think, in America, somebody would call it schnuddering, right? Because you say shen nadar, person promised to give money. So that schnuddering over the course of 52 weeks, plus chagim, plus, you know, maybe, but the extra aliyot, the question would be how much extra. But in any case, that was their situation. So they turned to Rav Herzog. He says he doesn't think fundamentally that there is a difference between making an extra aliyah, meaning splitting up the parsha into more pieces than tradition set it up as doing, as opposed to reading it over and over again. That's what he held, and he's going to show it. He refers to a tshuva, a response of the Rivash, who he says said that. Now, we're going to get to the Rivash in a second. I went and found it, because I find this topic very, very interesting, especially because it comes up even not in Milan, it comes up in the case of Simchas Torah. Right, on Simchas Torah, Jewish communities all over the world read the parsha over and over again. And to me, I've always wondered about that. And the Rav Herzog is going to give a tshuva that's going to say something very different than my own understanding has been. And I'm not going to argue with him. But I just want to point out the question is, doesn't it seem like you're needlessly causing more aliyot, needlessly causing more invocations of a bracha of Birchas HaTorah, and causing a lot of extra using of Hashem's name? And I would have thought, it's just me, and this is going to be an exercise in why it's not always good to be me, I would have thought that when you split up the parsha into more pieces than is customary, yes, you're adding to the people coming, and we're going to get into whether that's allowed on Chagim or not later on in this tshuva, and that'll be a discussion, but it's at least material that you haven't yet read, and therefore you're having another guy come up to read it, but you're reading new material. But I would have thought when you just stop repeating it, when you're just repeating it just because you want to create more opportunities for it, I would have thought that was a question. In any case, so the Rivash in Simon Pei Dalid, this is the Rivash to which Rav Herzog pointed us to, points out that in B'chol Eretz Yishmael, meaning all Muslim countries, all the Jews who are living in Muslim countries, on Simchas Torah, O Yom Chupat Katan, which I had not realized that, or known that in their times, the Rivash lives in the late 1300s, early 1400s. I'm pretty sure that's right. Mostly in the late 1300s. He passed away in 1408, but he lived through 1391. That's what I remembered. And he had to move to Algiers after the riots in 1391 in Spain and the killings and whatever. Okay. In any case, so this tshuva, he says that not only did they read this parasha over and over again on Simchas Torah, they would do it on Yom Chupat Katan, on the day of a Katan's wedding. Right? So the day, I think today we would think of that as an ufra, right? The Shabbos before, maybe they would have a special minyan on a day a guy got married, you know, get married on a Monday night or a Thursday night, not sure, but on the day, I think it was a Shabbos, like the Shabbos after, the Shabbos before, they would read the parasha over and over again, shekol b'nei ha-kahal korin b'torah u'mevarchin, that everybody there can get an aliyah. And sometimes, he says, the chazan has to go over the seder chamisha u'shisha pe'amim five or six times. Now, I would like to point out that five or six times is such an interesting number because even if you're going to say that they split the parasha not the way we ordinarily do, but they split it into smaller pieces, and the minimum size piece is, he says he's here, she speak l'kol achad gemel psukim, that everybody has to get three psukim. So if it's a Shabbos parasha, let's say it's got 120 psukim in it, that's actually a slightly large parsha. But let's say that would mean that 40 people can get an aliyah every time through the parsha. And if you're telling me you have to go through it five or six times, it means there were 240 men there. That was, it seems like, a largest community they could imagine. And this is on the day of a chuppah of a chassan, so it's like an ofer. So you imagine there are guests there, there are lots of people there. It's a reminder of the size of Jewish communities that you used to have. In any case, for our purposes, other than me enjoying noting the size of Jewish communities, for our purposes, the question is, or the point is, the Rivash is clearly comfortable, or is being asked about, we'll see that he's comfortable in a second, he's being asked about, is it okay? Can you read the parsha over and over again? Is it not a problem of lo tisa Hashem Hashem l'kechal shav, that we are just needlessly invoking the name of Hashem and using Hashem's name, which we generally assume is a prohibition in the Torah? Because maybe when the Gemara in Megillah says that on Shabbos, when you read seven people, you can add to that number, that's when the parsha is long enough that you don't have to have people read over again. In other words, the questioner is sort of reasoning the way that I suggested before, that maybe there's a difference between, if I break up the parsha into more pieces, well, there's new people coming, and maybe there's a value in that. But if I'm just going to read the parsha over again, what's the added value there? What am I doing other than creating the opportunity to make a bracha and have everybody stand up there in front of the Torah? And what's the reason that we believe that that's acceptable? Or is it acceptable? So the Rivash thinks that it is. He says, Nireh shehu mutar, he thinks that it's acceptable. That once Chazal said, you're allowed to be mosif, you're allowed to add, then there's no more problem, lo tisa Hashem Hashem l'kechal shav, there's no problem that you're using Hashem's name, invoking Hashem's name for no good reason. Since they are reading the Torah, they need to make a bracha. I'm not arguing with the Rivash, he's a Rishon, I'm not arguing with Rav Herzog. I think that there would be issues that you could raise or questions you could raise with them if they were sitting in front of us that we could ask them about if they were here. In any case, you could say, well, but you're going to have people read over the same thing. He says, there are times when we do that in halacha. And this is a very interesting claim of his, because those times we do it in halacha is, I think, because we have no other choice. He seems to be assuming that no other choice factor is not a relevant factor. He talks about Chanukah. So in Chanukah, you read the gifts of the Nisi'im. That was the reading for Chanukah. So we read the Nisi'im, but there's not enough in Psukim for the three Aliyot that we need on Hanukkah. So the Kohen reads a little bit, the Levi reads a little bit, and then the Yisrael reads over again what they read. So too on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. In exile, in Israel, they just read the same thing. He doesn't talk about it. In Israel, they read the same thing over and over again, right? In Israel, they read, let's say, on the first day of Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you'll read Bayom HaSheni, and then the next guy will read it, will get Bayom HaSheni, they're going to read Bayom HaSheni, and just read over and over again. But even in exile, where we have a Sveka Dioma, and therefore we can split it up among 2 days of Korbanot, we can read the two and three, he points out that the third guy reads what the Levi read again, that was their tradition, and the Revi'i guy read both of the Parashiyot. So you have people repeating things because of the Sveka Dioma, but the point is that you've got people reading things over and over again. Then you notice that some people held that when the Gemara says that you can add to the Aliyot, some people thought that was only on Shabbos. But Rashi there says, no, when it says you can add, it means it's everywhere. So even though it's not often done, in fact, halakhically, the Gemara was allowing adding Aliyot on Yom Kippur and on Chag as well, on holidays as well. And therefore, you're allowed to do so, and so too does the Rambam. That's the Rivash. So the Rivash is very comfortable, based on the examples of Chanukah and Sukkot, The Rivash is comfortable with reading over and over again when occasion demand, when occasion calls for it. Now, you could have said, well, the Rivash is a Sephardi, and that was a Sephardic custom, and therefore they can do it. So the first text says, no, even for Ashkenazim, we have the example of Simchas Torah. The custom became on Simchas Torah that you read the Torah over and over again to let everybody get an aliyah. It's part of our celebration of Torah that we all get called up to the Torah. So since that's true about us and Simchas Torah, you should also not have to worry about if you did it now in terms of supporting a shul. And then there's not a problem either of lo tidgodudu issue we're going to get to later, so I won't talk about it now. But fundamentally, just as a basic introduction, let's remember that when the Torah says lo tidgodudu, which literally in its context means don't scratch yourself in mourning over somebody who has passed away, the Gemara understands it to also mean at a d'oraita level. It's not a rabbinic drush. It's a d'oraita. It's the Gemara's understanding of what the Torah said, that it also means the Jewish people can't create or manufacture splits among the Jewish people. And that would be, it would seem to be in custom as well. So the Refertzak says, Shenirash, Shibidavash, you know, Mikar Hadin, Ein Bazem Shalom Lotgo. There's no actual halachic difference here. Then Refertzak suggests that there's no Lotgo issue either, which is, I think it seems to me like a very big critic, because it would mean that any matter that everybody agrees is a matter of custom, we should never worry that there's a Lotgo issue, that by adopting a different custom than other Jews around me, I am creating a sense of two Torahs that I don't have to worry about that at all. It's only in matters that have to do with actual halacha. However, he says, in my shuls, in Ashkenazi communities, if they ask me if they could start doing that regularly to raise money, I would say, you know, it's so against our custom. Our custom is, our Ashkenazi custom, he says, is that we read the Torah the way it is. We don't make kosafot on holidays or Yom Kippur. And on Simchas Torah, we do what we do. On Sukkot, we do what we do. And Chanukah, we do what we do. But that's it. So that's what I would have thought in my Ashkenazi community. But that's not because he thinks it's usur. It's because that's what our custom has been. I wouldn't change the custom. He does remember that he says more than 40 years ago, back when he lived, remember, Herzog had this interesting life. He was born in Lomża, Poland in 1888. And then when he was 10 years old, he moved with his family to the United Kingdom, and they settled in Leeds. So he grew up in Leeds. His father was a rav in Leeds and later in Paris. And he eventually, Herzog, Isaac Halevi Herzog, eventually becomes the chief rabbi of Ireland from the age of 33 until for 15 years. And then he moved to Eretz Yisrael and became the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of the Mandate. So he lived a long time outside of Israel and built up a whole career as a rav. So his father did as well. So he says he remembers many, many years ago, more than 40 years earlier. If this is 1954, 40 years earlier, 1914, he was a young man. He was in his mid-20s. He says he remembers that his father was told that the Eliyahu Rabbah, which is a halachic sefer that I have my Bar Ilan, but the reverse is going to say he doesn't have. He says, the Tari and the Sefer, I don't have the Sefer to check it. But the Eli Rabbah allows making Hosafos and Yom Kippur for tztaka purposes. So that would be another factor allowing for it, because it's for tztaka purposes. And he says, I can't judge that, because maybe that was only a particular case. Maybe the Eli Rabbah didn't say you can do it in general. Maybe the Eli Rabbah just meant you can do it, you know, for a particular occasion. Or maybe there were captives. So Pidyon Shvuyim, redeeming people from captivity, has a special halachic value in our tradition. And maybe it was only a Yom Kippur that happened on Shabbos, because many people hold, as we said, that Shabbos when you make osafos. So even though the Rivash says, no, we paskin like Rashi, that the Gemara really meant you can make osafos anytime, it in fact is the custom, by and large, that we only make osafos on Shabbos. And maybe that Yom Kippur that people are quoting to his father was only about a Yom Kippur happened on Shabbos. In any case, it doesn't make sense that Ashkenazi communities would follow this kula that this Italian community is. So refer to the writing of them, I wouldn't paskin this way. I don't know why, you know, you never see the question, you know, not never, but often you don't see the questions in these responses. It could be that they said to him, can we do this, and would you do this? And maybe he's telling them, I would never do this, not because I think it's luckily problematic for you, but because it's Ashkenazi. And then he says, shall kol panim yesh bazeh mishum hamachloket, shezehu shinui gadol me'od. That in any case, I wouldn't do it because it creates machloket. Now, generally, the assumption is that machloket means that there will be strife over it. There will be dispute over it, and therefore you shouldn't do it. So we're going to get to it in the tshuva. First, it's going to mention the idea of whether you have to worry about it or not in these cases. But what he's saying is that if one Ashkenazic shul that he refers to were to start doing this, people would complain about it or find it problematic, because it's a great change. It's not a great change halachically, but it's a great change in actual practice, and therefore he would never do it. It's interesting that either that means that whatever people are alert to and would be bothered by, or he might just mean, I think he probably means the first, that it's such a big change, people would complain about it from other shuls, and that would create strife. But it might be that he means that just by doing a big enough change, he's creating division. Because one shul does the, you know, you go to that shul, oh, they have so many hosafos. And you go to that shul and they don't. And it could be that he meant that, but I'm not sure. It's unclear to me. It could be one of those two options. I think probably it's like that he assumes that people will actually get into fights about it and complain about it, but maybe not. But none of that is relevant to the communities in Italy, he points out, because they have hosafos themselves. So it's not a matter of, are you going to make hosafos? Because they also have hosafos. They just split, they just chop up the selected Torah portion into small enough pieces that they can add the hosafos that they need, whereas these people read the same size of the oath as all Jews all over the world. They just do it over and over again. So Rav Herzog doesn't think there's a chashash to machloket, that there's any need for, that there's any issue to machloket there. To me, again, I don't know for sure, because I can imagine if you chop up a parsha into more pieces, the extra time comes from people coming up to get their aliyah and making their mishaberach and things like that. But you read the parsha over and over again, it means you're actually reading much more content. It gets to be longer. Could be that that makes it all that much longer. That would lead to machloket, but I'm not sure. In any case, then he says his father, refers to quotes his father now, who had a sefer on Torah, on Chumash. So his father in Parshas Noach had spoken about a case, had written about a case where you had a bar mitzvah, and for whatever reason, you needed to read the parsha twice. Right? There were particular cases that the circumstances weren't important, but that when his father was talking about the case, he said he didn't think there was any problem whatsoever, and he wasn't sure why people were worried about it. In fact, he said, why wouldn't you have established the Kriyas HaTorah in general should be more than one time on a Shabbos so that people could remember it, so they would like penetrate into people. We generally assume that just seeing something once does not lead to remembering. You need to see it over and over again. So why wouldn't that have been the takanas? I think the answer to that probably is that people wouldn't stand for it and they were doing the best they could. It's hard enough to get people to listen to one time through the Torah reading now. Imagine if it was always true you read the Torah over and over again, what people would do with that. In any case, that's what Refertzak's father wrote, and it shows that as a halakhic matter, it doesn't seem like there's any particular clear prohibition in reading the Torah over and over again, even on a particular Shabbos, a particular day. Right, so I'm sorry. So our first ex-father had actually said it's a matter of Tircha D'Tzibur, that people wouldn't put up with it. But so if you have a bar mitzvah, and everybody's happy about the bar mitzvah, and it's going to be good for them, and they're happy to do it, or like on Simchas Torah, where people are happy to have everybody get an aliyah, or the case in Milan, Italy, where you do it for the money, for the shul, because it's going to support the shul, and especially since it's an Italian city, Rav Herzog thinks that it's okay. Now it comes back to the lotit go to do question, right? Should we say that if it's going to create a difference between them and other shuls in Milan, and the other shuls in Milan aren't thrilled about it, should we say that it's a problem lotit go to do, it's going to separate the Jewish community, and therefore they shouldn't be allowed to do it? Now, if you say that it's a problem machloket, and here there shouldn't be a machloket that comes to it, and therefore you'd say that this should be okay, why shouldn't there be machloket here? There should be machloket here, because it's not that different. It's not that different, because the other shuls are making hosafot, they're just not doing it by reading Torah over and over again, and that change, the first thing doesn't see as made a big enough difference. But maybe you could just say, halacha of lotit go do is halacha in the Torah. You can't be different than other Jews in your community. If other Jews in your community only do hosafot by chopping up the parsha more, then that's all you can do, and you can't change from that. Rav Herzog is claiming, no, we have good reason to think the lotit go to do is a matter of not creating machloket through our changes. It's not just any change. The change that will create machloket, there's a change that is insignificant. That would be why before he said it's only changes that have to do with actual halacha. But the change that's insignificant in terms of causing machloket, causing strife, and the strife will come then not because people say you're different, we don't like different. It'll change because they'll say you're pretending the Torah says this when we're pretty sure we hold the Torah says this, and that's what the offensive change would be. But am I allowed to assume that lotit go to do is a matter of the ta'am, the reason for it? Maybe I just have to take lotit go to do at its word. That's a whole big question of halakha in general. Do we doresh ta'am adikra? Are we darshina ta'am adikra? Do we allow ourselves to assume we know the reasons for the Torah and allow that to shape our application of a halakha? Meaning, if the Torah has a reason, if we can be confident that we know the Torah's reason, that's always a question, but if we can be confident the Torah's reason, then we would also like here. If Lo Tzgodu is just a black box, don't change from other Jews, then you can't change from the Jews. But if it's don't change from the Jews because that will create strife and division among the Jewish people, then I could already say those changes that won't create strife and division should be permissible, not a problem of Lo Tzgodu. So that's the question. So Rav Herzog says, the Rambam seems very clearly to hold that the prohibition of Lo Tzgodu is in fact a Torah prohibition. And the reason why it's important to say that is because if it was only a rabbinic prohibition and they just referred, and Chazal referred to the verse of Lo Tzgodu as sort of a way of referring to it, but it was a rabbinic one, so then the fact that we use the reasons of the prohibition in shaping how we apply it wouldn't be so surprising because it's a derabbanan, because it was created by Chazal. So that's why it's important for us to point out, for the Herzog to point out, that the Lo Tzgodu and the Rambam seems to be a right to halacha. He understands it to be a prohibition in the Torah, and yet in the Yad Chazakah, in his Mishnah Torah, in his halachic work, he explains that it's a matter of machloket. So it sounds like you can use Tama Dikra, you can use the reasonings for the Pasuk, even if it's a kula, and so too, he's going to quote a gaon, the Rav Chaim Yehuda Leib Litwin, a sefer called Sha'arei Deah. You can look him up online. He lived from 1840 to 1903. He was a chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, and then he became a rav himself in Brody and Smargon, an important guy, an important achron, and he has a sefer called Sha'arei Deah, and he notes there that the Lechem Mishnah held, Lechem Mishnah is a commentary, an important commentary on the Rambam, the Lechem Mishnah, Hilchos Malveh Belovah, the third chapter, writes that whenever the Torah explicitly tells you a reason, so then we're allowed to rely on the reason. That's what he held. I think this is a very complicated topic, and this is not the last word on it, but that's what he says. Not only that, so that would all be reason. So in Lo Tzgodu, right, that would be written in the Torah, with the assumption would be written in the Torah, that it's a matter of separating the Jewish people. You'd have to talk about the Pesukim, and I don't want to get into it now. We have to talk about whether the Pesukim really say that or don't really say that, but that's what he is understanding it to be, and therefore it should be okay. Not only that, another issue is that within Lo Tzgodu, we have a general principle. I shouldn't have said general principle, it's a term I reach for too often. There's a discussion in the Gemara about when Lo Tzgodu applies to an entire city and when not. Rava in the Gemara in Yevamot, Daf Yud Daled, held that when you have two Batei Din in a city, when you have two courts in a city, there's no problem Lo Tzgodu. That's what Rava held, meaning that since they're separate Batei Din, each group knows that they go to this Beit Din, or that they follow the rulings of this court or that court, and therefore if the two courts differ from each other, there's not a Lo Tzgodu problem because they've already turned into sort of two different Jewish communities for that purpose. That's the basic question. What counts as a Jewish community for Lo Tzgodu problems? So Rav Herzog says, and he thinks that in Chutz La'aretz, it's outside of Israel, Kol Beit Knesset Ke Beit Din Bifnei Atzmo. He thinks every shul counts as a separate community for those purposes, and that would add support to the idea that this shul can do what it wants because it's like a separate beit, it's like a separate court with its own practices, and therefore that should be good enough that you can do what you want. However, the Rambam paskins like Abaye there, right? Usually with Rava and Abaye, we paskin like Rava. The Rambam held that in this case, the halacha follows Abaye, and Abaye had said, now even two Batei Din in the city is still a Lo Tzgodu problem because they're all in one city. So there's a whole discussion about that, why the Rambam would paskin like Abaye, how he could have, etc. That's not our topic. Rav Herzog doesn't get into it, but he does point out that here he thinks even the Rambam would allow it because two Batei Din in one city, he argues, or Herzog argues, that when Rambam said two Batei Din in a city is a problem of Lo Tzgodu, if they have different rulings, people follow different rulings, that's when both Batei Din are assumed to be courts whose rulings are applicable to the whole city. Because then what happens is really you have one city community with two courts in it. But now, I think that's hard to say, because it's hard to see what Abaye's principle was. Why would Abaye have allowed that? If they're really just one city, then they're not two courts. And if you're saying, well, no, they're two courts, so they're two courts, then they really have to separate from each other. But in any case, different conversation. But however you read that, he says, since this shul is only applying rulings to this shul, he thinks the Rambam would have agreed that there, even Abaye would agree, basically, that two Batei Din in one city, and they really are separate, and Rava would be the way, and we would follow the idea of Rava, that they're separate enough, right? Because it's only about how you read the Torah. And he says, V'lama tehei machloket. Why should there be a debate? If one shul chooses to read the Torah the way it reads it, why should there be a debate? again, I think Rav Herzog is making a lot of assumptions here, because that's the kind of logic you apply to lots of halakhic principles. So it might be that fundamentally he thinks that every shul is its own place. But then that should be true in Eretz Yisrael. It should be true about Jews everywhere, right? If one set of Jews in town choose to do this and another choose to do that, then you've sort of gotten rid of Lotit Godolu completely, because why should it bother you? I think Rav Herzog probably would have answered, and he might be right, and I'm not saying that I have any right to argue with him. I think he might have answered that, no, what I mean is that reading the Torah in a shul is really a very internal experience. If you have different Jews, let's say, following different halachot about what's kosher and what's not kosher, so that could be a loaded go-do problem, and that could be a problem of the Jews in a public way separating from each other. But the fact that Jews gather inside of a building and nobody knows what's going on in that building unless they go into that building, that could be less of a loaded go-do problem. I'm not sure everybody would agree with me about this, but I think is the claim that Rav Herzog is making. Now he adds, as he hinted before, that it's also true that this is only an issue of minhag. This is all a custom question. And the Rivash wrote clearly that if you hold that when the Gemara says aval mosifin, it only applies to Shabbos, then you should have a problem with Simchas Torah as well, about how you can do hosafos, and yet Ashkenazim add and read the Torah many times and Simchas Torah and all those kinds of things. And therefore, there's no lotit godolu issue, because it's actually a custom that has already been enacted. Meaning, it's one thing to say we don't read the Torah more than once, and we don't read a particular portion of the Torah more than once on a particular occasion, but then I say, except that you do, because look at Simchas Torah. So you can say, no, we only do that on Simchas Torah. So Rav Herzog is saying, there is no such thing as we only do that on Simchas Torah, and therefore, there can't be a loaded go-to-do problem as well here, because it's in fact something that we do, and even Ashkenazim do, let alone the Sephardim, who had this custom of adding Hosafot even on holidays, as they did in Italy. And this group is just trying to do something slightly different. Then he notes that according to the letter, it seems like they don't really worry that the other shuls are going to have a problem with them, and there's going to be a fight, because probably shuls didn't care enough about each other, but they wanted to know if it was right and appropriate, whether or not it would actually lead to a machloket, right? In other words, there could be a problem with Lotit Godolu of separating from others, even if the others will be polite enough not to fight, but I think they'll be worthy of fighting about. If Lotit Godolu is we shouldn't create division among the Jewish community, you could say, well, as long as nobody else will fight about it, then it's not a problem. But these people writing to him, and Herzog is agreeing that there is this factor, is that no, it's not just a question of whether in practice a fight will erupt, it's whether there's something that's worthy of a fight. So there's Gemara in Sukkah that talks about Rabbi Akiva noticing that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua, I think, would not shake their lulav at the same time as the rest of the community. They shook it only at the beginning of the end of Hallel, and not throughout. And everybody else in the community did it throughout, and so aren't they separating themselves? And isn't that a question of machloket? So it seems like in that Gemara over there, Rabbi Kiva understood that they understood that nobody would see it as an issue worth raising a machloket about, and that therefore they were allowed to do it. And that seems to be reversing. There's a whole discussion that I'm not getting into, but that seems to be a support for the idea that no, that if you're pretty sure that it's the kind of thing nobody else will have a machloket about, and there's no good reason why they should have a machloket about it, then you're allowed to do it, and it's just fine to do it in practice and to act on it. Then he closes, as we've seen many people close, especially in his time. Rav Uziel did this a lot, so maybe it's just a custom, a practice that was common to the two of them. He says, "L'vasof ani mevakesh mikem lahatzia tshuvati zot lifnei ma'alat kvo torat bring my ideas to the rabbin of your city, raise it with them, see what they say about it, and if they have questions about it, let them send back me the questions and I'll deal with them again." Rav Uziel used to say, don't do this unless other people agree with me. Rav Herzog isn't quite saying don't do this unless people agree with me. He's saying, check whether they agree with me, and if they do agree with me, if they don't agree with me, bring back their ideas and let's talk about it further. So that is a responsum of Rav Uziel's for the 27th of Iyar, about whether or not a shul can read the Torah over and over again in order to raise money through the giving out of extra aliyot, and his fundamental idea being that since in that town they already add hosafot, they already make hosafot, they already add aliyot in the course of holiday and Yom Kippur readings, that reading it over and over again is not a significant difference. That is responsum of day four, the 27th of Iyar. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Brown, with David Hochhauser, I bid you a good day.